This is Dr. Will Tuttle, your host for the Worldwide Vegan Summit for Truth and Freedom. We have now the opportunity to learn from the many years of vegan experience and the inspiring example of Dr. Armaidi May. Dr. May has been a practicing small animal veterinarian for 16 years and a vegan advocate for 22 years. From a young age, she loved animals and is a graduate of the University of California, Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. Dr. May worked at an emergency dog and cat hospital, then trained in veterinary acupuncture, and for the past 14 years, she has had a veterinary practice for dogs and cats in the Los Angeles area. Dr. May has volunteered offering spay and neuter services to disadvantaged communities locally and abroad, including in Guatemala and Nicaragua. She has served as the president of Vegan Toastmasters, a public speaking organization which empowers vegans to speak effectively on behalf of animals, and is the founder of VAPA, the Veterinary Association for the Protection of Animals, which educates the veterinary profession about the benefits of veganism and encourages veterinary schools to offer humane surgical teaching methods in their curriculum. So Dr. Armaidi May, it's wonderful to have you with us. You're also well known for your advocacy of health freedom for humans. And so I'd like to go ahead and just begin by asking if you could just say a little bit in the beginning here about your veterinary practice and your veganism, because you're affectionately known as the vegan vet, and I think you know a lot about that, and then move into what we're seeing in the human world here with children and the vaccinations and so forth.
Sure. Thank you for having me. I went vegan after learning about the cruelty to egg-laying hens and dairy cows. Of course, I was raised vegetarian thanks to my mother, whose father had witnessed a pig being slaughtered and vowed never again to eat land animals. Growing up, I always loved animals. They were my friends, not food. It just made sense to not eat them. And when I learned what was happening in the dairy and egg industries, I just couldn't turn my back on that cruelty. And of course, there are environmental benefits, health benefits, prevention of world hunger, so many benefits to a vegan lifestyle. I've started this nonprofit VAPA, Veterinary Association for the Protection of Animals, to bring awareness to these benefits of a vegan lifestyle through documentary screenings, which I've done a number of, including Game Changers, Cowspiracy, Peaceable Kingdom, Forks Over Knives, and one that both you and I are featured in, A Prayer for Compassion. So we're trying to get the word out as best as we can. And this relates to our current crisis with the human element in large part because our freedoms are being impacted, which also limits our ability to get this message out. So it's all interrelated. And when we look at the type of fraud and corruption going on, which I'll get into later, we can see that just as there's truth to be brought to light in terms of what's happening to factory farmed animals and any animals who are raised to be eaten that is not made publicly available generally, so too are truths buried in regards to what's happening in the vaccination industry. And it's my hope that we can bring this to light so people can truly make informed decisions for themselves and their children.
What are some of the things that are happening, I mean, that you've uncovered? It would be so interesting. And also just like what's been happening politically about this as well. I think it's connected.
Yeah, definitely. So I learned about this whole topic starting in 2015. I saw that my state senator was a co-sponsor of a bill called SB 277, which was introduced in California to prevent religious exemptions or remove religious exemptions that were previously in place for children whose parents had a religious reason to not have their child vaccinated according to the CDC schedule. So even if a parent or parents discussed options such as delaying the schedule or having some injections skipped, that would have been not in keeping with the CDC recommended schedule. And that basic right was taken away from parents in summer of 2015 when Governor Brown signed SB 277 into law. That really caught my attention. So I probed further into this whole debate, which I know has been going on for decades now. And I came up across a documentary called Trace Amounts. And the name of the film pertains to trace amounts of mercury, which are still present in certain vaccines, particularly flu shots. And what I found really shocked me. It turns out that mercury is toxic at parts per billion. It is one of the most toxic compounds, and it can cause autism, and it does, amongst other issues. The reason that this became known to people was through the work of Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who has unfortunately been maligned unfairly, and he was not the only one to bring this to light, but he was scapegoated by the media, unfortunately. It turns out that he was just beginning to open the door to that discovery, and there were many other scientists and doctors who have seen countless cases of kids presented to their practices who were acting totally fine, developing normally, speaking, having good eye contact, and then getting these vaccines and abruptly regressing into autism. So now we have truly an epidemic of autism in our country. 1 in 36 children is affected. It used to be only 1 in 10,000 back in the 80s. And what this documentary also explains is that this thimerosal, which is a mercury preservative, was introduced in 1931 by Eli Lilly, the pharmaceutical industry company. And it was the beginning of an increasingly toxic load of mercury as the number of injections increased year by year with more flu shots and other vaccines that kept being added to the children's schedule, that it became way more than what was even considered safe by the FDA. And somehow this escaped regulation. So we have a system where children starting as newborns with the hepatitis B vaccine that has a very high level of aluminum that's also a neurotoxin are being exposed to excessive amounts of mercury through an injection. And when it's injected as opposed to ingested, it is very difficult to detox. It's not impossible. It can be detoxed with certain chelation therapies that need to be done under the guidance of a medical professional. But it is very difficult to recover from something like that as opposed to consuming it orally, because with the gastrointestinal tract, that can process out these toxins more efficiently. When it's injected into the bloodstream, it can go to the brain, cause inflammation, and have devastating consequences. So these children who have autism, their lives are impacted severely, as well as their parents' lives and their families. Some of these children who are severely impacted have to wear helmets and diapers. They can't have a normal life. And if they then don't have adequate care, it's going to have a ripple effect for the rest of society. So when I realized how exponentially this problem is growing, and now we have 72 vaccines given to children by age 18, and the religious exemptions are taken away, this was a serious concern of mine. So I kept probing further and learned as much as I could about this and shared this documentary, Trace Amounts, as well as the documentary Vaxxed, which was produced shortly afterwards by Del Bigtree, and that goes more into the MMR vaccine and how that given too early, which is what the schedule recommends, can lead to an increased risk for autism, and how science was deliberately manipulated. Data was selected in such a way that critically relevant information was excluded on purpose in order to affect the results of the study to make it seem like the vaccines were not a causal factor when they very much were. So there was blatant fraud that occurred. And we see testimony of people representing the CDC lying through their teeth in front of Congress. And we see testimony from representatives trying to bring the truth to light and being shut down. And what it all comes back down to is the fact that there's so much corruption in the pharmaceutical industry And they have no financial incentive to make vaccines safe, because ever since 1986, the Supreme Court ruled that these vaccines are unavoidably unsafe, which means that the pharmaceutical industry is exempt from liability. Now, if it weren't for the mandates, that could be tolerable. But in the face of mandatory vaccination, it is truly unacceptable to have these injections forced upon us.
And there was actually, I remember seeing in the film Vaxxed, testimony of William Thompson, who was the senior scientist at the CDC, who said that he was directed to destroy the evidence that this vaccine you're talking about, the MMR, was actually causing autism. It was a direct causal relation was established in black males, and that was deliberately covered up. So, and the CDC came out and said there is no link between this vaccine and autism. There is no link, when they knew there was a link, especially to black people, and mm-hmm. that was deliberately covered up. And so we see, I think, also something deliberately, perhaps even racist in this whole thing,
yeah.
where they deliberately cover up harm in this way. I mean, this is something that's well documented, and yet it's been covered up, and he's never been allowed to speak to Congress.
Yes, and that is a very striking point, that William Thompson, the senior scientist at the CDC, admitted he feels great shame when he meets families with autistic kids because of his role in covering up this information. And you're absolutely correct that African American boys were at even a heightened risk for developing autism when given the MMR vaccine. It's interesting in relation to this COVID situation we're faced with, because there's increasing pressure for people to get this injection. I call it an injection because it's not a true vaccine. It's actually an experimental gene modification agent. And there have been absolutely devastating effects. Thousands and thousands of people have died already, and probably many more than that have not actually been recorded properly. We can get more into that a little bit later. And millions have suffered adverse effects. It's just so tragic what has happened. There is still time to prevent needless suffering if we can raise awareness about the harms of this injection and the fact that there are options for treatment. We do not have to resort to this, that there's no rationale from a medical or scientific standpoint for it. But because the pressure has been so intense, people have lost their jobs, their livelihoods, there have been divorces and breakups and all kinds of things that have gone wrong in families due to this pressure. And it's interesting that 25% of the members of the black community are taking this injection, which is a lower percentage than the white population. And yet they're introducing segregation 2.0, where you can't go to a concert, you can't eat at a certain restaurant, you can't go to this convention or whatever the case may be if you don't have a vaccine passport showing you're COVID vaccinated. And so what does this actually end up meaning? This is racist. But it's so interesting that it's not seen to be that in the mainstream media, which of course has been very deceptive this whole entire time. And there have been multiple lies that have been perpetuated. It's mind-boggling, really, when I think about so many layers of deception. And I feel grateful to have come across the information that I did in 2015, which, of course, has been around for decades. But it was really the foreshadowing of what was to happen in 2020 and what we've seen this whole past year, because they started off taking away religious belief exemptions for children. And although there certainly were many parents, thousands of parents who were up in arms about this, and many went to Sacramento and voiced their concerns, And I saw these heart-wrenching stories being shared in front of the committees, and yet it was just rushed through like it didn't matter. And it really stunned me to see these legislators hearing these stories. I mean, I would think that they would be moved to some extent to hear these tragic accounts of children becoming vaccine injured. And then with the passage of SB 276 in 2019 that Governor Newsom signed into law, medical exemptions were taken away, which was a break of the promise of 277, which was bad enough taking away religious belief exemptions. They guaranteed medical exemptions would remain, and they went back on their promise. And then, despite numerous objections, I flew up to Sacramento. There were thousands rallying. Bobby Kennedy Jr. was there, Del Bigtree. We had huge numbers voicing their concerns, and yet again, it just was signed into law very quickly, and now these vaccine-injured children who were already injured, some of whom who have autism, who have seizures, who have all sorts of issues, autoimmune problems, are again being injured because they don't have a medical exemption anymore, that option. So here in 2021, we're facing adults having to subject themselves to this. Now, I will say that there are solutions. There are ways out of it. And I think it's important, whatever your situation is, to find a way to not take this injection. It's just not worth it. So if you're being pressured by your employer, or whoever is making you think you need to get this, go to forunitedsolutions.org. That's forunitedsolutions.org. And print out a religious exemption form, fill it out, and get it notarized. It's really that simple. Show it to your boss. Show it to whoever needs to see it. If you're trying to get to school and they're requiring it, then you can show it to them. But it's so important to stand up for your rights. There's also the organization Peggy Hall runs, thehealthyamerican.org, that has a plethora of resources, legal documents that you can research and get guidance and inspiration from. And just realizing that whether it's the mask, the nasal swab PCR test, or this experimental injection, these are experiments. And you do not have to consent to them. The mask is a medical device. The swab is a medical experiment. And the injection is a medical experiment, and they all can cause harm to varying degrees. They are not benign interventions. In the case of the masks, we're seeing children have increased bacterial infections around their mouth and skin on their face, getting acne. We're seeing increased incidences of bacterial lung infections because they're rebreathing their own bacteria from the mask that gets all dirty, and they're just wearing it for hours upon hours every day. They're also inhaling their own carbon dioxide, so they're not getting enough oxygen to their brain. They're not able to express themselves. They're not able to see other people's expressions. They're denied the proper developmental and psychological growth that is crucial, especially in the younger ages when they're still learning how to communicate. Especially toddlers, they are being denied something that is their birthright, to see people's facial expressions, to understand how to communicate. That's a major part of human communication. And it's really not based on science whatsoever to say that someone who is healthy, who is not exhibiting any symptoms of illness, should have to wear a facial covering. There's no science to say that that prevents transmission of any illness. Now, if someone is like sneezing and coughing, well, then let that person stay home. That's fine. But let's not punish healthy kids who, if they do get ill from COVID, most of them are going to recover very quickly. And it's got a 99.9 plus percentage survivability rate. So there's absolutely no rationale from a scientific standpoint to have these kids wear these masks. Now, when it comes to the nasal swabs, those are very harmful as well. They can cause damage to the olfactory nerve. They can cause loss of taste and smell, which is one of the symptoms of COVID, ironically. And I really have to wonder when people say that so-and-so got sick with COVID and this and that. Well, I wonder if that person may have taken one of these swab tests. I have not taken the test, but I've heard from others who have that it is quite a traumatic experience, very painful, very upsetting, and it really is unnecessary. They're sticking ethylene oxide, which is a carcinogen, and graphene oxide, which has been found to cause increased magnetism that can be making the person vulnerable to connection with 5G, which is another big concern that relates to this issue. There certainly are reports of magnetizing people who have gotten the injection, where a magnet will adhere to that person's injection site, and in some cases, other parts of their body as well. So I just want to emphasize there are solutions. Do not feel pressured. I understand how intense that pressure can be, but ultimately, each of us is responsible for our body temple, for keeping it healthy and strong. And just because our government is corrupt, just because the pharmaceutical industry is pushing this so aggressively, does not mean that we have to submit to this. There are ways to get out of it. And I encourage you to link up with like-minded people, join committees, join meetings, go to potlucks, meet new people who understand this issue, who are willing to work with you to support you, form committees, form networks, build a community of support, and you can get through this.
Right. I think I really appreciate your giving an overview of the dangers and the destructive possibilities of the masks and the injections and the swabs. And I would just add maybe, or see what you think about, but you mentioned with the masks, it's mainly children that are harmed by the masks. Do you think wearing these masks is a good idea for adults? I mean, there's a lot of people going around in masks or working in masks all day. And when I see that, from my point of view, I think, gosh, you know, this is breathing in again. As you know, I'm sure through your training, we have about four main ways to eliminate toxins, and the breath is one of the main big ways. And so if you're just blocking that, it does terrible damage, I would think. And maybe we don't know the long-term effects of hypoxia and hyperpenia, the loss of oxygen and the excess carbon dioxide, what it does to our brain, perhaps, in a long-term situation.
I think that's absolutely true. Yeah, and they've predicted dementia could be around the corner years down the road for people who are adults, even who are wearing the masks for long periods of time. I think that it's part of this grand deception that has been put upon us unfairly. And the fact is that we are social creatures. We are not meant to have coverings over our mouth. There's no rationale behind preventing transmission if the person is healthy, because one of the myths of this whole crisis has been the myth that an asymptomatic person can be a transmitter. And there's no proof to actually make that assumption verifiable. It's not verifiable. There have been studies that show you can have droplets if someone is spitting, but that doesn't translate to actual transmission. And it goes back to something called terrain theory, which I want to touch on because it's important for people to realize just how much manipulation there's been to make us think that vaccines are safe and effective. And that's been drilled into our minds time and again, almost to the point of it being a religion unto itself. But when you peel back those layers of deception and you realize that Louis Pasteur, who was the father of what's known as germ theory, apologized on his deathbed. He was fraudulent in much of his research. He stole research from Antoine Deschamps, the father of terrain theory. On his deathbed, Louis Pasteur admitted, the germ is nothing, the terrain is everything. What that means is that by keeping a healthy body, which includes a healthy spirit, being compassionate, having joy, eating healthy vegan foods, organic, minimizing exposure to toxins, drinking enough water, getting rest, taking vitamin D supplements if you need them, and certainly a lot of people are absolutely deficient in vitamin D, getting the right nutrients, vitamin C, zinc, eating a whole foods vegan diet, and taking care of your body, you are going to be in a stronger position. Your immune system will be boosted. And the immune system cannot be underestimated. That's one of the big deceptions with all of this as well, is this absent conversation about the immune system. And when we neglect to even bring up the immune system, that's like the elephant in the room.
Right. So the idea that they want us to believe is that they can inject an immune system, right? I mean, they can inject immunity.
It doesn't work that way. That's not how our immune system works.
Right. Yeah. So what you're getting into is you say there's no rationale for this. Scientifically, there's no rationale to have people wearing masks. There's no real hard data that shows that. If anything, I think it's the opposite. Same thing with really everything that we're doing. All the evidence is that these vaccines are very harmful. We've never seen such a harmful vaccine in the history of vaccines. I mean, it's completely blown the doors off of everything. So, but I think what we know, what's sort of unspoken, is that there is a rationale, right? I mean, there is a reason this is happening. It's not just a big mistake, like, oh, they're blundering and just don't know what they're doing and they're making mistakes. I mean, it seems like it's very well thought out, actually. And you started talking a little bit about the CDC, NIAID, the NIH, and the legislators. I mean, there's a huge amount, it seems to me, a lot of money and power. What do you think is really happening? Why are these legislators not listening to people when they show up?
It's a really good question. And what I've come to understand is that some of these legislators, and Senator Richard Pan, who's out of Sacramento, was the lead co-sponsor of SB 277. And when I did my research, I found out that he received a very large sum of money from a pharmaceutical agency or company just very shortly before SB 277 was introduced. And in fact, that was even before the Disneyland measles outbreak, which I found very sinister. I think there's definitely a sinister component to what we're seeing, without a doubt. I think that when you look at some of the other aspects of what's happening on a global level, when we look at the World Economic Forum and some of the policies that they're churning out with this great reset that's being proposed, the digital passport, it is very concerning. And really what this COVID vaccine program rollout is doing is getting compliance, and so too with the mask mandates, getting people to comply with a system that is ultimately paving a path towards the enslavement of humanity. It was clear to me from the very beginning of the COVID lockdown that this was not about health. And having been a vegan for over two decades, I know that the trajectory towards embracing veganism, bringing it to people's awareness, getting people to make those changes, learning how to eat healthfully, is a slow, painstaking process sometimes. And as much as we reach out to our legislators and our community leaders and we share this information, it can be a very slow process, even though we've definitely made advances and more people have access to vegan food, which is great. But when I saw the speed with which the mask mandates unfolded and how swiftly they were imposed on children and adults, it became extremely clear to me that this agenda had nothing to do with health, even though they claimed that it did. And it had everything to do with control. And that's when my suspicion was confirmed that there was something sinister and certainly planned behind this whole unfolding of lockdowns, which of course harmed small business owners, led to increased suicides, tragically increased drug overdose deaths, and many other problems that we've seen as a ripple effect from this. So it became a priority for me to speak out about this and encourage other people to question things. If it was really about health, and I'm not advocating mandates, but what about mandatory plant-based eating? What about not having alcohol and cigarettes readily available? Right. What about providing free vitamin D instead of free COVID shots with an ice cream and donut to go with it? So when you actually look into where the money is coming from and the priorities and how they're placed, there's just no way to conclude otherwise, in my opinion. So I think that you're spot on with that. And unfortunately, the CDC has roots in corruption that go way back. There's a revolving door between many of the pharmaceutical companies and the directors of these organizations that have been rewarded monetarily for their corruption.
Right. So the underlying thing is that there's a lot of money in sick people, right? I mean, that's where you make the big money, is with sick people. You don't make money with healthy people. So everything, they say it's for health. We care about you. We want you to be healthy. And yet everything is in the opposite direction, because masks and fear and social isolation, as well as the massive transfer of wealth from small and middle-sized businesses who were locked down and forced out of business to these huge conglomerates like Amazon and Walmart, because everybody's now shopping there. I mean, we see this massive transfer of wealth, which caused a lot of stress to people, and it's also paving the way for universal basic income, perhaps, where everybody basically, you can't make money anymore, so you've got to get it from the government, but you'll only get it if you do what you're told in a certain way. So it seems like this, everything is rolling out in a way that sees us as human beings as exploitable commodities to be culled or dominated or exploited. And yet, why is it that vegans aren't in the vanguard helping to raise awareness about this? Because we're so clear as a movement that the enslavement of beings is wrong, and the pharmaceutical industry is devastating to animal welfare. I mean, they're making billions of dollars on sick animals, sick people, and testing on animals, torturing them in their laboratories, killing them. There's no more evil abuser of animals, really, than the pharmaceutical industry and the big food and the big agribusiness. I mean, they work together. So what do you think is happening, and how can we help? Well, maybe I'll just ask you that first. What do you think is really happening here in our movement?
I've wondered that myself. It is sad that so many people have been deceived by this agenda, which is a nefarious agenda to exploit not only non-human animals, but humans as well. And it's done under the guise of doing the right thing, showing care and compassion. And so what's being done is exploiting our innate compassion, our desire to be caring to one's neighbor and one's associates and friends, and twisted that, perverted that into complying with something unhealthy, tyrannical, that actually does the opposite of caring.
Wow.
So many people have been misled into thinking that they are doing the right thing because they want to do the right thing. We are inherently compassionate. That's why we're vegan, because we don't want to hurt animals. Yet so many vegans and non-vegans too have watched television programs that are funded. 80% of the funding can come from the pharmaceutical industry. America and New Zealand are the only countries where that heavy bombardment of pharmaceutical ads is allowed on television. Bobby F. Kennedy Jr. has said numerous times that he cannot even have a proper discussion of the risks of vaccines aired on mainstream television because the funding would be pulled if that were done. That they would have their newscaster who allowed that interview to be fired because the person in charge of the funding is a pharmaceutical representative. And that's why it's so dangerous to only rely on mainstream news. So what I'm trying to do is share these documentaries with people. Trace Amounts, Vaxxed, Vaxxed 2, 1986 The Act, Seeing 2020. Seeing 2020 came out just in 2020, and it shows how hydroxychloroquine and other remedies are valid treatments for coronavirus. Yet there's been such heavy censorship of these cures that doctors have been reprimanded, in some cases even fired, for merely recommending these alternative treatments that have been around for many decades and have been proven much safer than this experimental injection, which, by the way, is an experiment for the next several years at least, because we cannot possibly see the full long-term effects from it just a few months or even a year out. I mean, it takes at least 5 years, if not longer, to see the full effects that can develop from this new experimental technology. I also want to mention that Dr. Robert Malone, who invented the mRNA technology and himself received this COVID experimental injection, having seen the levels of adverse effects that have unfolded from it, regrets taking it, and he's now very outspoken in advising against taking it. However, those interviews are pulled off of YouTube. They're censored very heavily. You have to look on BitChute or Rumble, you know, other platforms that are censorship-free or at least have less censorship. So it's become very challenging for people to get the information they're seeking to help themselves and their family members. Ivermectin is another example of a treatment that has shown great promise when given appropriately at the right dose. And yet the narrative that we're hearing on the mainstream is that it's unsafe, that it's horse medicine, which it can be used in horses, and it is, certainly. That doesn't mean that it's not used in humans as well. It's been around for decades, and it has a high safety profile. It has many different applications.
Wow. Well, you know, I just read that the country of India really was not having many problems at all until they introduced the injections, and then they suddenly had this huge spike in cases, people getting sick apparently, but the interesting thing was that in India there's still hundreds of thousands of homeopathic and alternative doctors, you know, that are practicing. It's not dominated completely by big pharma and the AMA like it is in the United States and most European countries by the standard Western modality. So they just started giving out ivermectin a lot, and suddenly there's no problem in India anymore, which is not reported in the mainstream media either. And it's also probably not reported that the doctor with the WHO who basically publicly said to the country of India, don't use ivermectin, it really doesn't work, that doctor is a woman. She is now on trial and is facing potentially the death penalty in India for causing so many people to die.
Oh, that's terrible.
You know, by deliberately repressing ivermectin.
Oh,
you think, well, the same thing. I mean, the same kind of justice we saw in Germany, for example, that doctors who were deliberately killing people eventually went to jail or sometimes were executed because of their heinous crimes against humanity. And what you're saying, it seems like these are crimes against humanity. I mean, we're killing so many people with these injections, and so many people have died from the lockdowns and from the masking and from just the fact that they go into these hospitals and get put on ventilators, which seems to be devastating. And the whole thing, is there really any foundation to this? I mean, when you talk about the PCR tests, how do we know there's actually that people are sick, right? I mean, that's another whole issue.
Exactly, and that's one of the deceptions. The PCR test, the polymerase chain reaction test, which was invented by Carey Mullis, was never supposed to be used to diagnose infectious disease. It was supposed to be used for research purposes only. And Carey Mullis was very clear in stating that this was not to be diagnosed to use for diagnosis of illness, because it can pick up pieces of genetic material and amplify that by a very large degree. And what's happened is when they amp up the cycles of the threshold cycles, it causes up to 97% false positives. To my knowledge, there's not even been a purification of the virus that's been confirmed in a laboratory. My understanding from Dr. Andrew Kaufman is that there was a computerized sequence that was formulated, but it was not actually isolated in a laboratory, which brings up a whole nother series of unanswered questions. So then there were cases of influenza A and influenza B being primarily what was isolated from samples that were obtained. There are just many inconsistencies. And when there's mandatory testing now being implemented, what we're seeing from that is a lot of false positives, which then drives up the case numbers. And we see newscasters saying, oh, there's all these cases, but then it's really a case-demic, not a pandemic. But I really refer to this as a plandemic, because there's ample evidence that the lockdown was planned, the rollout of mandatory shots was planned. And if you look at the Operation Lockstep report under the Rockefeller plans, it's spelled out, and just like how it's played out with the resistance, with increased authoritarianism, removal of our civil liberties, and so on. So, and that's just one example. I mean, there are many references that give credence to the idea that this was a plandemic. And so it's not just a conspiracy theory. It is actually conspiracy fact.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah, that right. I know the Rockefeller report goes back, oh, I think, back into the early around 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like it's such an obvious scam, really. I mean, it's like we know that, for example, in any human being at any time, there are cancer cells, right? There's cancer cells here, there's cancer cells there, but we have an immune system that's pretty good, and what goes around and it eliminates those and it cleans them out. And if you wanted to scare everybody, you could say, well, we're going to have everybody tested for cancer, and if you test positive, then you got to wear a mask, and you can't social distance, you got to go to the hospital. And so everybody would test positive for cancer. I mean, if you really look hard enough, you'll always find it. You'll just always find some. It's always there. And it's the same thing with these PCR tests. If you ramp up the amplification high enough, you'll always find a little bit of this coronavirus from some time somebody had, whatever. And so it seems like the key thing here is really the media, that people who partake of the mainstream media, all they hear is this fear and the science, so-called science, giving a bunch of lies, really, that are designed to enslave them. And then I've never seen, I mean, I don't think anyone in the history of I don't know when has seen such absolute heavy-handed censorship. I mean, it's worse, I'm sure, much worse even than in communist Russia at the height of the Cold War. I mean, it's you can't get anything out on the mainstream media at this point.
Yeah, and I've noticed that on Yahoo articles, for example, they've disabled comments. So there can be just a completely ridiculous article, as there are frequently. And normally in pre-COVID times, there would be opportunities for comments. And that's one of the most interesting things to me when I look at a video or an article, is to see what are people actually thinking about this.
Right.
And yet that's been taken away. And now being locked up in our homes for some of us, it's harder to share information. And then having more monitoring from Big Brother through emails and other electronic means that are tracked and traced, it's really concerning. And I think this is heading down a path towards a Chinese-style social credit system, which would be devastating to this country. I truly hope that we can turn things around. I think it's going to be a big challenge, one of the biggest challenges of our lifetime.
Right.
But I think we have to. We just have no other option. We don't want to be controlled like slaves. How can we defend animals' rights if we can't even speak freely and exchange ideas?
Right. Yeah, the vegan movement itself is being attacked as part of this. And I remember going to Russia, actually, back before glasnost and perestroika. And it was interesting because the people knew that the mainstream media of Russia, they knew it was all controlled. But the irony is that in many Western democracies, I think people still don't get it. They still think that they're getting some kind of journalism from the mainstream media, which is, seems incredibly gullible. But it just seems even vegans have not been able to have that basic clarity because, I guess, never really deeply understanding what veganism is as a questioning of the narrative that takes away sovereignty of the animals and of humans. I mean, if we're losing our sovereignty, that's nothing more precious than that. How can we can't defend the sovereignty of others if we don't have our own sovereignty, right? I mean,
precisely.
This is the foundation of everything.
Absolutely.
And yet vegans very often seem to somehow, as well like the general population, fallen into the warming up water that and getting boiled alive. So we're trying, I guess we're trying to help. So what can people do at this point? We're pretty much at the end of our time. Do you think, you've already mentioned a few things, but what would you go out on and as a positive steps that people can actually take right now in these critical, really, I would say, crisis times? How do we respond to this?
Yes, I would get to know people in your community who understand the severity of this issue, or at least are questioning some of the regulations and mandates, so that you can form a community where you live of support, because that's going to become essential. Learn how to grow food, even if it's some herbs, a fruit tree or two. You can even try hydroponics if you don't have soil available to you. Learn how to make things from scratch. Experiment in the kitchen. Make food on your own. Learn how to be more self-sufficient. Prepare with adequate food, water, and basic supplies that you might need if things get difficult. You want to be prepared. That's important. And if you can, buy some land. Form a community where you can support each other. We're going to have to form a new society that's based on freedom and truth, compassion, true health. And in order to do that, we need to have a community of support. There are plenty of communities here in the Los Angeles area. There are communities all across the country that you can tap into, make new friends, educate people. And there are many people who are aware of the deception with COVID, but are still eating animal products. But I've found that a lot of them are open to learning about veganism. And just like some vegans have fallen under the deception of this COVID pandemic, there are people who are not vegan yet who have fallen under the deception of the happy cow myth and so on that we vegans have learned is not accurate. So no one is perfect. We all are on a trajectory of self-evolution to learn more, to become better people. And we can expand our circle to people of different political beliefs, different backgrounds, and realize that we're all together on this planet for a purpose. If we can tap into that connection, we can derive strength and motivation to carry on. And we're going to need it because this is not easy what we're up against. I know that even the emotions that can be experienced can be quite challenging. So learn how to be in nature, ground, walk barefoot on the soil, in the sand, and get that soothing that you need every day if you can, ideally, because it's important to maintain a positive attitude, which is important for your immune health. Take care of yourself and just pray that you will be protected and guided to do what you need to do when the time comes.
And what about the issue of compliance? You know, that's always there. I mean, do you think it's a good idea to just go along with some of these things so you survive, or do you think it's better typically to not comply?
I would say not comply if it can be done feasibly, if you can manage to find ways around things. In the case of children going to school, I would recommend homeschooling, pulling your children out of school, because there's gotten to be a point now where it's so harmful what's happening to children with the masking, the PCR testing, and now the vaccinating, that for these children to have a decent future, it would be better for them to just not even go to school than to have that be put upon them. And, it, you know, we don't even know how long the negative effects are going to last from this. It could be years to come that they could have negative effects from the psychological trauma, the physical effects, and so forth. So it would definitely be preferred to homeschool, find communities, hire a teacher that can teach a small group of children to get through this, rather than complying with what may end up being, you know, very harmful in the long run.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Almighty May. You've been a real leader in not only in the vegan movement, but in whole Southern California, I think, to help spread the message of the importance of health freedom. And you're involved with some groups there. And I think that's another thing we can all do is to support groups, start our own groups in our local areas. If there isn't one, start one. Start Freedom
Yes.
Cells. Start health freedom groups wherever you are, and resist. I think resisting is really important.
Yes, there's healthyandfree.us here in Southern California, many other groups. If you join Telegram, you can join mask-free shopping groups, mask-free businesses, the Freedom People. There are more businesses that are standing up for our constitutional rights, and we can support those businesses instead of the ones that are not in favor of our liberties.
Right. There are also alternative social media sites like MeWe and Gab, Telegram, Signal, where there isn't so much censorship. So I think that's important. An alternative, like you said, to YouTube. These are things that we need to understand and, like you say, connect on the ground with people in our neighborhood. Can you say just at the end how people can follow your work?
Sure. Yeah. So my website is veganvet.net, and that's to have me as your house call vet if you live in the L.A. area. I treat dogs and cats. I do ozone therapy in addition to Chinese herbs, homeopathy, and acupuncture, along with conventional remedies. And as far as my activism, I'm with a group called Freedom Rising, also the Children's Health Defense California chapter, which if you go to ca.childrenshealthdefense.org, you can find out about upcoming events. And on Facebook, you can follow me there, Instagram, Vegan House Call Vet. So just get involved and spread the word. Donate if you can. If you don't have money to donate, volunteer, support each other. That's really important. And get out there for the rallies to show support for medical freedom.
Right. We're all in this together. When we enslave animals, we end up getting enslaved ourselves. I think that's the lesson here. Thank you so much, Dr. Almighty May. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you.